Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have LJ Musqua. LJ is an Indigenous influencer and comedian who was raised in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, but now resides in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. He is a father of two amazing daughters and has been sober for over 12 years. On today's show, LJ courageously shares his story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome LJ Musqua. Hi, LJ, how are you?
Oh, I got into a fight with Bigfoot. I lost, but I'm still alive.
you have a lot of Bigfoot encounters. So everybody can get to know you. Can you please introduce yourself?
My name is LJ. I'm 34. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents. No, I'm just kidding. I do comedy. My main goal is just to make people laugh. I do voices. Sometimes I pretend I'm the chief, or I can be the deadly cousins.
So I can kind of switch on the fly. I can even go into I pretend to be an auntie. Who are you going out with? I don't know. Just crazy stuff. But I do love just to make people laugh. That's the goal. My page is about,
like, on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, is just, I just try to bring laughter. I didn't start out to make money. It wasn't my goal. I just, guys at work were like, you got to make videos. You're funny. So I started posting and people started liking them. And then here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's how I stumbled onto your page on TikTok.
Perfect. I've had a lot of trauma and I've fell down, but I picked myself up quite a bit, actually. I don't know if you want me to go right into it, but I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I grew up in North Winnipeg, off reserve. I am First Nations or Indigenous, but I actually grew up on the north side in a really bad neighborhood. I've seen a lot of things kids shouldn't see my age, like pretty gruesome stuff. And then I had to raise two brothers too. I remember my mom, she was into the drug scene and the partying scenes. A lot of you guys can probably relate, or some of you guys out there, you know. I actually kind of had to take care of my newborn. He was my brother. He was only 2 months old, the earliest I remember taking care of him. I was 9 years old and my mom was out. So I was brought into a world where I was shifted into responsibility at a younger age. And I ended up taking care of my brother as he grew up. And, you know, I had to feed him with the bottle, change his diaper, or just basically be a father. His father was in jail too, just to give you an idea of what my childhood was like. It wasn't my father, thank goodness, but my brother had a different father and his happened to be in jail. So I ended up raising him. And I got some leadership skills without really kind of knowing until I got older. I was always in that leadership role at an early age because I was raising, you know, a baby, my brother. And then I had another younger brother, the middle brother, that I protected on the side. So I was brought into, like, I guess you could say, a chief when I was very young. So after I got older, you know, there wasn't a lot of support for Indigenous kids or nothing like that. It was just, you had to make it on your own pretty much. And I ended up getting a job. I actually, I guess I could say it now, but when I was 17, I did pretty good. I got my license. I was driving my car to high school, and I had a job on the side while going to school. So I was a good kid, considering what I went through. And I remember I was going on this date, and I was kind of drinking. That was stupid of me. I was drinking and driving, but I had a couple of bottles in the passenger seat, and I remember just giving her. And I don't know, I was just being stupid, and I was just flying, hey, and I was going about 90 in a 50 zone. So I guess, I don't know how that would work in miles per hour in the States, but it was going pretty fast. And I went over this train track, and I got air. Like, I was in the air, like, I was like, woohoo! I was screaming. I don't want to yell on the radio, but I was being pretty dumb. And when I landed just past the tree line, a cop seen the whole thing. And he just flung his cherries on, and he started chasing me. And I actually went into the, I was in the country when this happened. I won't mention where it is. But I remember getting chased by this cop. And I can remember I was down this gravel road. It was very, very dusty. And I remember the cherries flashing behind me. You could barely make them out. It was that fresh gravel, so it was really dusty. So it saved me. Well, I know I'm talking like a criminal here, but I got away. He spun out. We went around this corner, and his cherries started spinning. And I ended up parking that car for 2 months at my buddy's place on a farm, and I covered it up, and I got away. But you know, like, it's just like, you know, don't drink and drive, first of all. It's, you know, it might sound cool when it happens, but it was actually very scary. And I wouldn't recommend it. Don't do what I do, or do what I say. Or do what I say, don't do what I do, I mean. But I had like a interesting life. Like, I got so many stories. I could go on and on, but I think the ones that'll stick out is I'll get right to what kind of molded me is. After that, I dropped out of high school. I kept working, and then I started hanging out with these guys. And, you know, we were drinking more. I was at the time, I was playing junior A hockey too. So I was doing pretty good. And then I started to go downhill. I got into the drinking. And next thing you know, I lost my job, and I was already out of school, and I wasn't doing good at hockey. I just took over onto the party life. I started dabbling in the drugs. I was doing cocaine, you know, a lot of drinking. And I ended up being on the street at one point. And then I met this really cool guy just on my travels in Winnipeg. And we ended up, I ended up selling drugs too. Wasn't very, very proud of that. But, you know, it was kind of good too, because I met someone that was, he was just like me. He was good. He didn't want to do it either. And I never wanted to do it either. I wasn't proud of it. But it was money. And he fished, he hunted, I fished, I hunted. We had this good background. Like, he was a good soul. You know, when you meet someone and you could feel when they have goodness in them, well, that's what he was like. Even though he was selling drugs, he was actually a good person. And one night he called me, and I didn't answer. And then he come over, and I woke up, and he was right beside my bed. I just let him, they come into my place. Yeah, I'm too tired, because I stayed up 2 days in a row. That's what it was like, you know, when you sell drugs. Sometimes you stay up on end. He didn't come back in the morning. Usually he'd come back, you know, and we'd have some drinks or whatever. That was just my life. About probably right around noon, the homicide detectives came over to my place. They took me downtown. They had some questions for me, and I was like, yeah, sure. So I wasn't just disagreeing with them at all. I don't even know how they found me. But they showed me a video clip at the gas station with him the night prior. And it was my buddy that me and him were in this gas station getting gas and some food. And that's how they found me, and just by, I guess, asking around, hey, have you seen this guy? And that was back in the day. This was 2006, so that's kind of how they did things back in the day. It wasn't like social media, like everybody's got a camera on their phone now. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of shocked how they found me. But yeah, they did tell me he was shot in the chest, the shotgun through a truck. He died while his truck was on fire because it hit the rad, hey? And that's how he died. And it really changed my tune right away. I dropped out of the game. I was done. I never sold another piece of drug in my life after that. Not long after that, I went back to school. I got another job. And I started turning my life around. And I after that, I had my daughter, my first daughter. So I ended up babysitting my cousin's niece, and her name was Jada. And I fell in love with her right away. I probably had her for about 2 weeks, and then I had to give her back to my cousin. And then when my cousin called me like the day later, and you know what, my daughter is crying for you. And she's saying, oh, I want uncle, you know, like I spoiled that kid. I pretended she was mine, right? Mm-hmm. I was with my woman at the time when we were watching her. And so I wanted to have a kid after, and I was with Jada's mom at the time. We tried, and we had Jada, and I named her Jada. I just wanted kids. And I think she's the breaking point. People say if you want to change, you have to have a reason. You have to, you can't, they say do it for yourself, but it's good to do it for yourself, but it's good to do it for other people that are important to you too. And that was my rock, my diamond, or something that made me want to motivate myself was my daughter. So when I had her, I changed. I sobered up too. I went to college. I got my, I upgraded. I did computer applications at Winnipeg Tech. And then after that, I was working actually at a bar. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Labor Ready Guys, but I literally started from the bottom, like Drake. I had to go to a temp agency. I was making $7 an hour, and I was going to school at the same time, and I was doing school in the evening. So my day was busy. I was like from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. at night. My school was 6 to 9, and then I had a little break in between, but that was like to get ready for school. And that was my life. I did that for probably about a year. I come home. I was staying at a hotel. It was $300 a month. I was staying at one of the worst hotels in Winnipeg. It was called the Merchants Hotel. I believe it's closed down now. But it was like you could hear gunshots. You could I remember I woke up and I heard this ruckus outside my window, and this guy got bottled. Like you could hear it, and then you can hear his head hit the cement. Like it was a rough neighborhood. And I just remember that reminds me too. I got jumped when I was selling drugs. I got hit in the face with a tomahawk. I got an indent. I got an indent on my chin that chipped my bone out of my skull. And I'd never seen swelling on my whole body like that ever. It was just so crazy. But yeah, just to give you an idea what Winnipeg is life on the dark side of it. So after I did this schooling, I was getting pretty close to getting done. And I come back to the hotel, and this guy was big. He was picking a fight with the bouncer at the bar. And it's one of those bad hotels where you have to get buzzed in. Like you have to get buzzed in to get to your room. You can't just go walk up there. So I got, I was at, like after like 9:30, it was after school, after work. I was just so tired. I was pretty exhausted in those days, but I was young too, so that helped. And I said, hey, can you guys just let me in? And they kind of looked at each other, and that one guy just come running right out the security door, and he started swinging at me. I don't even know who this guy was, but he was just mad. Just because I wanted to get buzzed into my place. And I tuned him up. Like I gave him a dirty licking, or however you want to. I tuned him up. Really, I was already in a pissy mood from working all day, and I did not need that. And I tuned him up, and I remember this girl come running out. Oh, stop hitting him, you beat him up. So I stopped, you know. I was then the security guard bouncer's like, hey, he was my friend. I didn't know what to do. I'm sorry, man. Like, look, man, just buzz me in. So he buzzes me in. I go up, and my pregnant woman there's, you know, up there with Jada, and told her what happened. next morning, the manager of the hotel comes in, knocks on my door, and I see her, and I open the door, and I'm going, oh my God, you know, this is all I need now. She's probably going to kick me out. And she's like, the first thing she says was, you know, I seen what you did on the cameras, and I was thinking, this is it, you know? She's like, I was wondering if you wanted a job. I was like, what? She wanted me to be a bouncer at the hotel. I was like, sure. And she fired that one bouncer, and I replaced him. And after that, we never really had any problems. But I ended up having to have to take a course. She wanted me to be a bartender because she saw I was bondable and a good, you know, I was decent that way and sober. And I ended up working the sales too for off sales, selling liquor. So I had three jobs. I quit my job for the labor ready. It was only like $7. And then she was paying me $15. So it was a no brainer. Plus I lived there. It was just a win-win for me and just made life easier. And then, so that's how it starts is, you know, I had this kid on the way and I wanted her to have a better life. She was born in Winnipeg Hospital. We stayed at the hotel for 1 month. I got a call from my mother. She was in Edmonton in Alberta and I was in Winnipeg and she had this job offer that was like, it was like 29 an hour and I was making 15. So it was double again. So it was a no brainer for me to go there. So I dropped what I was doing. I gave my notice to my manager and I told her like the money. And she's like, yeah, you got to go. That's an opportunity. And I went and I came out here and I did so good with Jada. She's got a better life now. She's 16. She doesn't drink. She doesn't smoke. She doesn't do drugs. She's got her own business. She's got over 6,000 saved. She's only 16 and she's going to high school.
Nice.
So my reason for the trauma is my daughter. So I know people talk about stories, but find something you can gravitate that you really want to do good for, someone you love, and just to make them proud. And I've had my mother, my father, they've both told me at different periods that they've lost them both too. They're gone now. My dad had cancer and my mom overdosed. But they did both tell me, you know, like they were proud of me. And I have really good memories of both of them. The last time I saw my father was when I had my other daughter, Coda. She was about a year old. And the last time I seen him, I gave him a hug. We were happy. And then with my mom, it was the same thing. She come over to my house. I just bought a house. And I bought some things for it. And I invited her over for a barbecue. And she was going through a hard time, but you could see it when she come in the door. She was so overwhelmed. It's like, my boy did this, you know, like you see tears in my mother's eyes. Mm-hmm. She was so happy for her son, right? Mm-hmm. But I did it all on my own. I didn't use help from my reserve. I didn't use help funding or I did it on my own. You just have to have a drive. I see people like, you know, they're on the street and a lot of it's drugs. They have addictions with alcohol. You have to stop those things if you want to change your life. I started from the bottom, man. Like I was homeless and now I own a house. I paid off my truck. I got a Camaro, a sports car. I got a brand new 2020 34 foot trailer. My house is, I got so much stuff. Like I know it's material possessions, but it's possible to come from nothing and mold your life and your foundations with your hand and build your empire. And now I'm doing comedy shows and now I have thousands of people follow me. Like I had nothing, mm-hmm. nothing, Ralph. I had nothing. And now I'm doing, you know, podcasts and radio interviews and, you know, maybe the next thing will be on the news. I just did I was talking with a manager and he wants me to do a talent casting for people looking for people in series or movies. So, you know, that's one of my 5-year goals is I'd like to bring humor on TV as well. So
wow.
Yeah, with the trauma, brother, it's got to be, you have to have a strong will. You have to want to be better. It's possible. It's hard at first because you have nothing, but it's like putting a stone on your property. You know, every stone you build your structure, it gets better over time. And that's just sticking with that. Even I lost a woman here, 4 years ago. She meant the world to me. I thought I was gonna spend my life with her and I lost her. I didn't go into drinking. I didn't do bad stuff to myself or my body. I just stayed positive. I've been talking to some beautiful women, and I'm not dating right now, but you know, like there's opportunities there too. Like if you have, if you like, women love a funny guy, a guy that takes that's responsible, you know, like that's solid. They like that sense of security and comfort too. And that's something that will happen over time when you build your foundation, is you're going to do so well in life. And that's my number one thing. And my number one piece of advice is you have to learn how to let everything go, because nothing will hurt you. And then it'll just help you build. It'll give you confidence. It'll give you, like, you got to conquer yourself, you know, Ralph, you probably heard that, right? And it's just, it's an amazing feeling once you get to that point. It took me a lot of years, but it's good. It's great now. And yeah, I just have a lot of love now. And I tell that to people when I see them. I'm not afraid. I say, hey, man, you take it easy and I love you. That's what I say to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Ralph, that's, I got so much more. I don't want to take up your whole cash just talking about it, but
no worries, man. You know, as Indigenous people, we deal with a lot of heavy issues, you know, but humor is a way everyone can kind of take a break for a second and just laugh, you know. And yeah, like they say, laughter is the best medicine, and natives have great humor, man. You know,
well, you know, I talk about my mother, but my father, he was sober 30 years. He was a superintendent. He was a supervisor. He had a prominent role in his trade. He owned land. He owned his own property, not on the reserve, off reserve. Like I was kind of explaining to you, he had a sports car, truck. So he molded me. I wanted to be like my father. So, you know, us Indigenous, sometimes we don't have fathers. I got lucky. Actually, my mother kind of took me away from my father till I was about 12 years old. But when he came in my life, he saved me. Like he gave me those tools I needed that I utilize right now to be a good man, mm-hmm. good father. So I got them from my father. And it's unfortunate, but a lot of Indigenous kids don't get that. And I think I should have said that in what I was saying there. But yeah, my father was a huge role model for me. He was such a good man, and he was funny. But that's what, when he brought up the humor, that's what I thought of my dad. Because I remember we went to Boston Pizza this one time. We were having dinner and he was just talking randomly. And then he said something funny, and I had soup in my mouth and I spit it out on the table and I couldn't stop laughing. I had, my cheeks were just sore. That's how hard he'd make me laugh. I just remember it being so funny. And I remember guys at work talking about him. They would tell me how such a good guy he was, and how's your dad doing, like, and how funny he was. And I would like to think I got some of my humor from my father, what I share to the world now.
Mm-hmm.
I might have twisted mine up a little bit with the Bigfoot, but it's still kind of like, you know, I was taught by a very, very deadly mentor. He wasn't a social media guy, but when I did my first big show there in Fort St. John, I did a comedy show there. He would have been proud. I couldn't believe it. Like, we had such a good show. It was a solid 2-hour show too. The crowd was laughing from the beginning until when I closed it. And I'm just looking forward. I have a big tour planned here. It's just in the works right now. I'm talking to a manager, and we're going to go across Canada, and once we do Western Canada, we're going to go on the States and just try to bring laughter, man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Has anyone ever come up to you, like, after a show and just say like, man, I was dealing with some heavy stuff, but listening to you made that go away for a second?
You know, I get it every week. I try to respond to as many as I can. But there is a lot of people out there that are hurting, and they do message me, yeah, quite a bit. I had one guy tell me, you know, I've been going through such a dark time and watching your videos and like what you're going through, and it inspires me. I hear that a lot, and it's still a little surreal to me, Ralph, because I don't see myself as a celebrity. I don't see myself as famous. I still feel normal. I'm such a down-to-earth guy. Like, I chill at home with my daughter. I play video games. I don't go out and socialize at that bar. People ask me to go all the time, but I'd rather be home. I just like being home. I'm a homebody. But, you know, I try to answer these messages. And after the show, no, not really. I have people more. It's kind of not embarrassing, but it's a little overwhelming. They come up to me and they ask, "Hey, can I get your picture? Do you mind signing this for me?" And I'm like, "Sure." And it just feels so weird to me. But, you know, I never got to meet my idols, like, or people that I looked up to. Like, I was a hockey fan, and one of my favorite hockey players was Timo Solani. He broke the record for rookies for scoring goals. I remember listening to a cassette Discman in the rink when that happened. That's all. But I remember I seen him, but I never got to. So I see it on their expressions. Some of them have been following me for a while too, and I still don't. I don't feel famous, but they make me feel special. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a good feeling. But yeah, I haven't really had anybody come up to me and say it, but I have lots of messages about people telling me about how I've motivated them, and that feels good because I had motivation too, and I'm just so happy I could share that with people.
Yeah,
because I had you know, my daughter was my big one, and she cleaned me up. She cleaned up my sobriety is from her. And I know people, like I was saying earlier, you can say, you know, you got to do it for yourself, but I did it for my girl. Like, I did it for my kids. Mm. I wanted them to have a better life. But I don't know if it's a selfless thing or whatever, but I would care more about them. But it was good for me too. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's great for me too. I feel great. I don't miss drinking. I don't miss drugs. I don't miss waking up hungover and gut rot, yeah, you know, and yeah. I don't have that feeling anymore. It's great. I feel great. You know, I'm getting older. I'm 42 now, but I still got some good years in me. Like, I'm like an 80-year-old bull elephant. You know what I mean?
LJ, thank you so, so much for coming on and, you know, sharing on the podcast and the radio show. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Great. Thank you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project every Thursday at 1 p.m. on 640 a.m. KYUK. The voice of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.